my name is Jill Cody, and welcome to Be Bold America. Be Bold America is a live bi-weekly talk show for those who are motivated to step out of their normal routine with the bold actions necessary to begin reuniting this country, save our democracy, understand the challenges ahead, and learn what they can keep doing, stop doing, and start doing to save our democracy. Our future depends on it. Our program today is Living in a Horror Movie and the Global Climate Strike. We will be talking about the upcoming global climate strike the week of September 20th through September 27th. And we will be mentioning the local activities you may join in Santa Cruz and on the Central Coast. And why is democracy and the global climate strike vitally coupled? Because those in the highest positions of power who are currently running our democracy, or what's left of it, are not interested in the issue, and worse, denying it even exists. They dismantle regulations meant to combat the crisis and appoint people who are happy to oblige in that dismantling. Democracy, a democratic republic, is the governmental organizational system in which we live, and we need to get loud and direct our constructive outrage towards these dangerous federal leaders and apply heaps of pressure so that the horror movie they are producing doesn't end in destruction. We have big things to do. In our KSQD studio today is Nancy Glock-Grinich and Stan Rushworth. It's my honor to have them both. Dr. Nancy Glock-Grinich is host of the Future We Need and How to Get It television series, is the founder of Within Reach Network for Strategic Citizen Action, and was the vice president for research at Intellix, developing an online deliberation process model called 3D Democracy. Nancy was also a faculty member at Shandong Youth University of Political Science in China. Welcome, Nancy.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Stan Rushworth is an instructor emeritus of Native American literature and critical thinking surrounding indigenous issues at Cabrillo College in Aptos, California. He is an enrolled member of the Chiricahua Apache Nation and is also a member of the Santa Cruz Indian Council, where he is an advising cultural elder. He is the author of Going to Water, The Journal of a Beginning Rain, and Sam Woods, American Healing. Welcome, Stan.
Thank you.
It's very nice to have you both in the studio, and thank you for being here. Now, Stan, I know you had something you wanted to share with the listeners right away, so why don't you talk about those couple of things?
First of all, Indigenous protocol is to give recognition to the land that we're on and the people who have stewarded this land for what archaeologists now say is a minimum of 15,000 years. That's the Awaswas people, the Yupi people of right where we're sitting, the Awaswas of Aptos, the Amamutsen, the Rumsian people. All of these people are what people call Ohlone. There are many, many thousands of these people living here today, whose ancestors took such good care of this land that an early Spanish soldier wrote, "California is a vast, well-tended garden." So this is a technology that goes way back. And as a visitor to this land, as a Cherokee and member of the Chiricahua Nation, I'm a guest here. And so I want to thank the people for taking such good care, and for the ancestors or the descendants of those people today struggling to keep that consciousness alive that's still very much in them. So Ushin Akhoda, 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 we thank you. Along those lines, on October 17th, we're bringing the MESA program and STEM program at Cabrillo College, and the English department is bringing Dar Jamail to do a presentation on his book, The End of Ice. It's going to be a three-hour presentation. We have Greg Castro, who's a Salinan Ohlone leader who's worked with California Archaeological Society for 25-plus years. We have Canyon Sayers Roods, who's a spokesperson for Indian Canyon over in Hollister, which is the only federally recognized Indian territory between basically Sebastopol and Santa Barbara. So the three of them will be doing a presentation. It's free. Please come. It'll be in the 450 the 450 building, 6 to 9, October 17th. The other thing I would like to mention is go online and look up Protect Juristack. That's juristac.org. And this is an issue that is happening right now. The Santa Cruz County Board of Supervisors has a say in it. The Santa Clara County, San Benito County all have a say in this. There's ceremonial grounds of the Amamutsun that has been having ceremony on it for, again, 15,000 plus years. Is under fire from Granite, who wants to turn that ceremonial grounds into a quarry, in which case they will be grinding this whole area into dust. It's something that we really need to not let happen if we want to talk about global climate change, and we cannot deal with protecting sacred property right here in our backyard, then we're kind of blowing smoke, as far as I'm concerned. And it's very important to remember that when people do ceremony on this land, they're doing ceremony for everyone worldwide. They're not doing it just for themselves. So this whole issue of private property, which today, right here, is preventing them from going on their land and doing ceremony, which is a violation of the Freedom of Religion Act of 1978 for Native Americans. There's just so much rule of law being violated. There's so much of a deep moral code that we claim to live by as democracy that's being violated right here, right now. So please go on protectjuristack.org and see how you can help.
And Juristack is spelled J-U-R-I-S-T-A-C.
That's correct.
So protectjuristack.org.
That's correct.
Great. Well, you're leading in perfectly, Stan, to my first question, is that if you would please provide us a grounding in why Mother Earth is imperative to protect.
Memuistie means we are your children, okay? And it's not a symbol, it's not a metaphor, it's not the earth is our mother, it's our science, okay? We are made up of everything she is, you know? And she is not an impassive observer of our condition. We are her children. Memu ischie means we are your children. So pretending that the earth is a passive person here who can just let us be sloughed off and it doesn't matter to her, it's like saying that a mother can lose her child and not be affected. And this is really ridiculous. But it's how far we have gotten away from the truth of our relationship. It's a relationship. It's not a concept. It's not an abstraction. And it's a relationship that has to be dealt with every single day.
Nancy, how do you see our American democracy facing and handling the climate crisis? Seems to me that for the planet to survive, we've got to control corporate power over our democracy. For example, while the Amazon is on fire, a reporter, Lee Fong, detailed how the Republican lobbyists in the United States are helping organize American multinational corporations to exploit the rainforest.
The effort of people throughout the world and throughout this part of California and Santa Cruz is one of reclaiming our democracy. This is a people that is self-governing, and we have come to feel overwhelmed and in despair and powerless and divided against each other. And that's not an accident. Most of everything in the media reinforces those things. So I want to step back and say, a friend of mine calls it interactivism, that there is our need to move from despair to determination. And a way of doing that is to find out all of the actions and the successes that are going on in this country and elsewhere. I'm thinking right at the moment of the REAMP project in the Midwest, where 6 and eventually 8 states organized themselves. They spent a year or so deeply understanding the systems they were in. It was the most polluting part of the U.S., dependent on coal, dependent on manufacturing, and they decided they wanted to become the opposite, the leaders in reversing this. They pulled together in a whole systems approach. And in answer to your question, I want to say that it is a whole systems problem. It is not the kind of oppositional problem. There are pieces of it, like if you're going to stop a pipeline, that are a direct head-on stop this now. But to actually solve it, it's a matter of really taking back our culture and every part of it. So in an approach that was called collective impact, they brought together the coal industry, the electrical utilities industries, ordinary people in the various towns, political leaders, educators. They started with the recognition that nonprofits on the one hand and foundations on the other usually set it up so they're in competition with each other. Foundations have NGOs competing with each other for money, and the foundations are competing with each other for prestige of doing this or particular sexy action. And that was not solving the problem. So they got 12 foundations and far more NGOs together, figured out this approach to bringing everyone affected by a system needs to be involved in making decisions about that system, which is how I define democracy. And this, in this case, was a matter of recognizing what were the relationships between all of these parties. And they spent a year and a half doing 2 closely related things. They were using a tool called causal loop diagramming, which is a way of spelling out who's influencing whom in a system. And they interviewed each individual and then each group of the system I'm talking about, and together built a map. In the end, it was a map they all could agree on. This is the system we're working within. And as they did it, everybody was talking to everybody. So people started understanding the gifts and the intentions, the constraints, the aspirations of everyone in the system, and they started trusting each other and caring about each other's needs and issues. From that, they created the most effective approach to solving, working with, stopping corporations. They stopped 30 new coal plants. All the governors became behind renewables, and there were a bunch of actions that came out of that. So that pulling together with each other from a systems perspective would be my fundamental starting point as you do your inner work.
You're listening to Be Bold America on KSQD 90.7 FM. Many voices, one station. Listen worldwide online at ksqd.org. We're speaking with Stan Rushworth, Instructor Emeritus of Native American Literature and Critical Thinking at Cabrillo College, who's also a member of the
Chiricahua
Apache Nation. Thank you. And Nancy Glock Greenwich, founder of Within Reach Network for Strategic Citizen Action. I'm your host, Jill Cody.
Coming Sunday, October 6th, it's Squid Fest West, a fabulous concert and silent auction to benefit K-Squid. The event takes place at the Resource Center for Nonviolence, 612 Ocean Street in Santa Cruz from 4 to 8 p.m. Come celebrate with performances by Keith Greninger, Tammy Brown, the Coffis Brothers, Steve Palazzo, William Coulter, Shelley Phillips, Steve Coulter, Anthony Aria, Dan and Laurel and the Dooners. Silent Auction includes a six-day photo safari to South Africa, art by Annie Glass, Squidware, music memorabilia, and more. Tickets are limited and available now at brownpapertickets.com. That's Squid Fest West, Sunday, October 6th at the Resource Center for Nonviolence. See you there.
We're back with our guests, Stan Rushworth and Nancy Glock Greenwich. And I'm your host, Jill Cody. Nancy, did I let you finish your thought there?
Well enough for now.
Oh, thanks. Good. Yeah. Now, Stan, any thoughts about the rainforest and what's happening with the lungs of our planet and the indigenous people there?
Thoughts or you want thoughts or feelings?
Both.
Well, I'm outraged.
Yes.
But I've been outraged for 75 years. And this is nothing new for us. Democracy is something that was forced upon us, that we never wanted it. The Indian Reorganization Act of 1934 was put on us and got rid of our traditional ways of operating, which were by consensus, and so majority rule was put into place. And all this was done in order to put corrupt individuals, usually males who'd gone through the boarding school process and had been stripped of their culture, their language, their traditions, everything. So they were open to corruption and graft, and they, of course, called this the, you know, part of a great deal for us, right? They were going to give us democracy. And all that was spurred on by the energy companies who had been met with resistance by the traditional forms of government, which all across the nation, which were usually woman-centered. You know, I don't want to say matriarchal, because that's not the case, but women very much at the center and honored, you know. So I don't, you know, democracy for me has never really existed as anything other than majority rule. And in a colonial structure, that puts the people who have at the heart of their culture, again, for thousands and thousands of years, the caretaking and stewardship of the planet, very much in a weak position. And so I think that's what's happening now. What we see now is that it's coming around to bite colonial cultures in the butt. And so everybody's getting on the bandwagon right now. But this is a bandwagon that we've been struggling with for, you know, a long, long time, my entire life. This is stuff that my grandfather gave me from the time I came up. I can remember back to about five when I started hearing these stories. So the end of life as we know it, which is what everybody's screaming right now, is kind of a chicken little thing to me, because, you know, here in California, we suffered a 90% population reduction in 25 years. And the people who did that, we have a sports team named after, you know, called the 49ers. So all of this is to say this has been a very, very long and deep struggle for us. And I think it's some kind of really deep paradigm shift that I think needs to happen. I think we need to understand our history. I think social justice issues, environmental justice issues, gender issues, all of it dovetails. It all comes together. So it's a completely holistic shift that needs to happen. And if it's fear of extinction that gets us there, I'm saying, okay. But at the same time, we have a sacred obligation to the children, you know, to not freak them out, you know, to not create so much fear and panic. We also have a sacred obligation not to let the panic of geoengineering and things like that take over. You know, we have to come back into relationship to planet. We absolutely have to. The last thing, you know, a guy I know, Kyle Powys White, is a Potawatomi environmental scholar, I think in Michigan. He said the last person we want hitting the panic button for a change is the person that caused the problem in the first place. And that's, from an indigenous standpoint, how we're looking at colonial culture.
Now, Stan, you talked about a holistic shift, and with the history that you outlined, we're still in this democratic republic governmental structure. How do you see it possible to make that holistic shift in the system that we're in?
Well, that's the big question, isn't it? Mm-hmm. I don't have an answer to that.
Well,
I think that when we can mobilize and save a place like Juristok, I think there are ripple effects that go out, and I think everybody has their place in society. You know, I don't want to put down any effort in any realm whatsoever. Everybody has their place. And I think it's a process of everybody listening to what everybody else has to offer to the best way they can. You know, not putting dominant methods out, not this my way or the highway kind of stuff. It just doesn't work. You know, we have to come back to a deeper sense of consensus. And I think that's... You know, there's so many things to talk about that, you know, in that we have to shift our idea of human nature as being something bad, right? Or something that's inherently flawed, and come back to believing that human nature is something quite beautiful and extraordinary.
Or exploited. You know, with nature
well,
being that
certainly
mindset.
That, and the idea of it being bad is the ultimate exploitation.
Ultimate, that's right. Nancy?
Yeah, let me totally pick up on what you're saying. Part of the beauty is throughout the world, people are turning to collaborative forms of reaching agreements and stepping up and solving problems to
yes.
stop fighting each other and start
yes.
solving our real problems. American people agree on 80% of the policies needed, none of which are being pursued right now. And
right.
there is a big question I'm not going to get into now. We could have another show focused specifically on how do you oust the oligarchy and what are the strategies and tools and the organizing. And there's some actually extremely promising things to really focus on what that looks like in the strategies. But meanwhile, here at home, as people can come together, Paul Hawken has said maybe climate change isn't something happening to us. Maybe it's happening for us. And I have found myself saying that this breakdown, we can turn it into breakthrough. We can take the changes, the collapse that we can no longer avoid, and open up possibilities we've never been able to reach before, mm-hmm. partly because of the pressure we're under, partly, if I may say, the learning from indigenous peoples around the world mm. who have held the torch, held the truth of what it means to be close to nature, close to each other, and listen. Everything begins by deeply listening to each other. I was having a conversation recently with a conservative friend saying, well, could we get together, you know, good liberal person, let's get together and talk so we can... you know, come to an understanding and so forth. And finally he said to me, why do we have to talk? Why don't we just do something together, like feed the poor together? And because we care about those things as well, And we can talk while we're doing that, which brought me to, it's not just a matter of building bridges, but building barns. Communities that come together don't let themselves be torn apart by political differences, racial differences, cultural differences, class differences. We have been manipulated into only, when we think of each other, we think of coming together as political opponents as opposed to neighbors, which brings me to one of the ways in which the tough times we cannot avoid are going to force us to face the issue of resilience. And resilience means the well-being, the survival of everyone in this community and every community we're connected to is immediately on the line.
Yes.
For example, I was just meeting an hour ago with Ernestina Saldana, and we're looking at a project that we'll actually be focusing on in climate, at the climate strike in our Real Democracy teach-in. The rise of the sea in Santa Cruz, it's not 10 years away or 100 years away. It's already making the downtown places unlivable. So we're organizing to do something about that as a community-led initiative. That's what makes it real democracy, working with everybody in town to come together to create a managed retreat to high, dry ground, supported by the whole community.
You're listening to Be Bold America on KSQD 90.7 FM, your ink spot on the dial. You may also visit KSQD's homepage and stream the station live to hear this show and other wonderful programs offered by KSQD. Check the website for the program schedule. Please also consider becoming a sponsor of this show or another favorite program. Community Radio thrives on your support.
Hello, Santa Cruz. This is Ralph Nader. Start your week off right by listening to the Ralph Nader Radio Hour every Monday morning at 9 a.m. right here on KSQD. Every week, we bring you the guests that don't get the exposure and the issues that don't get discussed nearly enough on commercial radio. That's every Monday morning, 9 a.m., right here on KSQD.
Now we're back with our guests, Dr. Nancy Glock Greenwich, founder of Within Reach Network for Strategic Citizen Action, and Stan Rushworth, Instructor Emeritus of Native American Literature and Critical Thinking at Cabrillo College, who is a member of the Hiraquawa Apache Nation. I'm your host, Jill Cody. One thing that I thought was interesting, just shifting to something that happened in Iceland. Did you read that, you know, one of the massive glaciers in Iceland is gone? And they held a funeral for it. And they also put a plaque there. And the plaque reads, "A Letter to the Future." OK, which is the name of the glacier, it's Okehokul, I think. OK is the first Icelandic glacier to lose its status as a glacier. In the next 200 years, all our glaciers are expected to follow the same path. This monument is to acknowledge that we know what is happening and what needs to be done. Only you know if we did it. Stan, any thoughts about losing a glacier in this world and then leaving a plaque for the future? And
well, you know, listening to that, I think of the plaques about the Trail of Tears.
Uh-huh.
I think about the plaques of Wounded Knee. I think about the smallpox blankets in Southern California. I think about all the plaques. And I think that with all the plaques in the world, we still have not shifted the thinkings that have got us to this dire situation. And as with any dis-ease, I think one needs to go to the core of the problem, you know. And part of the core of the problem, as I see it, I've been teaching 30 years at Cabrillo, Native American issues, and I always poll my students coming in to find out how many have ever read a Native American author. And this semester, out of 31 students, it was 4 people. And it's usually only 1 or 2, and it's usually only 1 or 2 writers that they've read, I give them about a three-hour reading packet of history of California, history of the United States, and they're all completely shocked. They've never had any of this in their entire educational process. So, you know, part of, again, any process of healing is a process of understanding what causes the disease. And I don't think that we're going to really get where we need to go until our major institutions really take the responsibility to step up and really look at how we got here. That's part of the process of curing. That's part of the process of healing. And the fears are the fears that are around, let's say, the mythology of democracy. I totally support what you're describing as a democratic process, but that's not my experience as a Native person in this nation that's called democracy. So I think we need to really to unravel the myths and unravel the lies to get down to who the heck we really are and why we've gotten to this point. The exploitation hasn't stopped. Trump is not an anomaly. Bolsonaro is not an anomaly. These are manifestations of something that's been going on for a very, very long time that's kind of come to a head in a certain way as we see it historically now. But Andy Jackson was something that came to a head for the Cherokee people that killed half the people in 6 month process. So, you know, you understand what I'm saying? There's something deeper we need to get to at the same time that we're seeking all the solutions that we can.
Well, what I was thinking about in answer to that, when you were speaking, to unravel the myths and we haven't done the shift to stop the direness, is this the whole concept of you have to make a profit. A profit on everything. It's profit on education, a profit on water, a profit on roads, a profit on land, a profit on just about everything. And what are your thoughts on just the capitalism and the profit making? Is it keeping us from making that shift?
Yeah, you know, capitalism is kind of a deep subject to get into. I was asked that question recently by some billionaires that do really good work with their money in really good projects. And I said, well, I don't know enough about capitalism, but I do know about intentions. And so it seems like with any system that you are operating under at any given time, I think to have good intentions, to have right intentions toward as much as you possibly can, you can operate within a capitalistic system. I don't want to wait till capitalism is overthrown to do the right thing to the planet or the right thing for social justice or for indigenous people worldwide. And I agree with what Nancy's saying, you know, about, you know, in a sense, what you're saying, Nancy, we say every single day, which is shihikayu, which means with all things I'm related, you know, and that's where we have to keep remembering that. And so we have to find a culture that keeps remembering that. And we all do know that in our core. It's in our DNA, you know. What's happening now, as far as I'm concerned, is fairly recent in human history. I don't buy that the profit motive and exploitation and greed and power are the fundamental human condition. I think this is maybe 3,000 years, perhaps, which is a blink in the eye in terms of human history. And we have to turn that around. And that's a long-term project. And it's also a short-term project, right? So we have to look in the long way, the way we've managed to stay alive as indigenous people over totally a 98% population reduction in a fairly recent period of time, in a short period of time. But we're still here, and we're still we're culturally intact enough to where the UN wants TEK to be happening. But TEK, the wisdom that's needed, is the wisdom of how the heck have we found the resilience to still be here despite this horrendous attack upon us that in this country is completely ignored by academia, by media, so on and so forth.
Nancy, I see you jumping out of your seat
I
there.
I am. Let me jump back briefly. I'm so turned on by what you're saying. In fact, let me start when we talk about democracy and calling, honoring the peoples here that the our ancestors are still here. We can call them in, and whatever we're doing, they're here trying to keep us saving this planet and saving each other. And our education, I have come to understand as an educator my whole life, I finally realized the most fundamental problem, even underlying profit, is we have come to define success worldwide as doing better than others. Better grades, better jobs, better salaries, better homes, neighborhoods, spouses, and we are rationing success, not creating it. Mm-hmm. We convince a handful, it's roughly, nicely, parallels the spaces in society, so enough people come out on top feeling justified in taking more than their fair share. A whole bunch are taught that they're mediocrities who don't deserve very much, and a whole more bunch more are taught that they're failures who didn't deserve nothing at all. And so they kill themselves and each other, zone out, become addicts. They do not unite to push back against a system that is so profoundly inequitable. So as a philosopher of education, higher education, which is my field, I found myself saying, okay, what if we changed the definition of success? What if I said the mission of higher education is to elicit, enable, and empower our higher purposes? Mm-hmm. And then I fantasized, what if among the protests, the revolution is that students all over the country and their teachers stood up and said, wait a minute. We need the education that is going to allow us to survive. And I was working on a book I called, and we'll still get back to, Higher Education and Human Survival. And it began with this reconnection to each other as human beings, acknowledging the way we have harmed each other over the years, but that our fundamental nature, what we literally evolved, is we're absolutely dependent on each other. We're this weak little being that can't get by at all, can't raise a single kid and survive to the next generation without absolutely needing each other. So we have that capacity. And because there are people like you, we still know the way back.
You know, in many, many Native stories, we're the last to arrive here. Humans are the last to arrive.
Yes, exactly.
And we're like, as a friend of mine, Greg Castro, put it, we need to have the humility to realize that all this was put here for us. We're like the last child born into a family where everything's laid out for him. And he's got a job. And that job is to be grateful for it and to honor his brothers and sisters and parents. And these, for us, are the animals, you know, and all the forces that have created the beauty that this is.
I want to pick up for also you. I know that you were in critical thinking, which was also part of my background. And I hate to say I came around through my own college experience and almost all the students and others I've known. It doesn't have to be this way, but the way critical thinking is often taught to freshmen and sophomores, it's to persuade them that their sense that life has meaning and the beliefs that they bring in with them are adolescent, they're naive. And they become critical thinkers, meaning they question everything, believe in nothing. And then they are excellent tools for a system that doesn't want them to ever ask about the larger meaning of what they're doing. So
yep.
I look towards all of the teachers who bring their hearts as well as their heads into the classrooms. And these days especially, again, one of the benefits, if you will, of the existential crisis we're in is we are now asking existential questions as do-or-die questions like we have never had to ask them until now. And the young people I know who are stepping forward with passion and insight and putting their lives on the line is the thing that makes me think, despite the nosedive we're in, the human commitment to living and the ancestors, the support we've got going into this will somehow pull out and will shed this unworkable society that we have gotten into for what is far the transformation that I believe this is going to make possible.
I couldn't agree more. And I was laughing when you were defining critical thinking, because that's what I was supposed to teach. But I actually teach real critical thinking, which is that it's critical that you think.
Yes.
Okay. And
you think only with your head, but your heart together.
I teach it absolutely, you know. And anybody that thinks they think without their heart is full of it. You know, it's not what we're made of, right? So I'm lucky in that I teach critical thinking in a multicultural environment. And so I'm looking at students from a whole bunch of different backgrounds. And what I do is give them a safe place to address what's going on in the world, what's going on in their lives. Real important text to look at, and that my goal is that they learn to perceive the way they think. You mentioned their ancestors, the way they think, the way their ancestors coming up through their DNA is enabling them to think in the very best, strongest, clearest way possible. That's what I do. I create a space where that can happen, and where the students are going back and forth with each other, and they all come out, most of them come out really, well, they all come out really good writers.
Wow.
And they do really well in school.
I'd love to be in your class, sir.
Well, anytime.
Well, that's what I was going to ask Dan next, was the name of your class, so the listeners
know. That particular class is English 2, Critical Thinking, and it's all focused on Indigenous writers, Indigenous culture and issues. Issues, pre-contact, current, dealing with the resiliency issue that Nancy brought up. And then I teach Native American literature, which is the class I'm in right now. That starts in about 1890, coming up through the present. And then in the spring, I teach a class with Noelle Smith that's a combination of Native American history and Native American literature.
Thank you, Stan.
Co-taught.
You're listening to Be Bold America on KSQD 90.7 FM. Many voices, one station. Listen worldwide online at ksqd.org. I'm your host, Jill Cody, and we're speaking with Stan Rushmore of the Hirakawa Apache Nation and Dr. Glock Greenwich, host of the 7-part television series, The Future We Need and How to Get It. Following Be Bold America is New Dimensions. This week on New Dimensions, a conversation with Zachariah Murray about mindfulness. She uses gardening as a model for being mindfully in the present, aware of what is around us in the moment. New Dimensions airs 6 p.m. on Sunday here at KSQD 90.7 FM following this show. So, back to our guests. And, you know, recently Scientific American titled an article saying scientists have been underestimating the pace of climate change. It stated, when new observations of the climate system have provided more or better data or permitted us to reevaluate old ones, the findings for ice extent, sea level rise, and ocean temperature has generally been worse than earlier prevailing views. This means that Greenland is melting faster than predicted, oceans are rising faster than predicted, the polar vortex will occur more often, etc. And in California, there's no longer wildfire season. As one Cal Fire supervisor said, the season is all year round now. We are beginning to live in a horror movie, and it's only just begun. And so building the urgency is something that the climate strike is about. And we have events that I know Nancy wanted to share, but there was also the organization there that you were going to talk to us about as well.
Yeah, well, we're fortunate in Santa Cruz, small as we are. There has been a consciousness growing for a very long time, and we have the Santa Cruz Climate Action Network that Pauline Seals and Carol Long, a number of people who have come up with some of the most innovative, just do-it-yourself citizens. Pauline is my ideal real democracy example in the contemporary context. For example, they just started talking to downtown merchants. They have a little sticker they put on the window. If the merchant cooperates, when it's summer, close your doors. When it's winter, close your doors. We don't want to close our door because it's not as inviting to passersby. Well, we're going to put this sign on your door saying you're cooperating in dealing with climate change. She comes up with dozens of those ideas that are easy things that go beyond changing your own light bulbs. They're an invitation to think creatively wherever you see behavioral changes that are modest to handle. But at the other end, we have, I'm going to come back to Pauline in a minute, but I want to jump to Citizens Climate Lobby, which is part of a national movement. It is the best approach to lobbying ever. It's fantastic. Show up the second Saturday morning from 9 to 12, from quarter of 10 to 12. Check ahead at the Walnut Commons. We hear a half-hour lecture from leaders who really, really understand how to get things done, how to talk about climate. They put together the bipartisan climate caucus. We are on the verge of getting bills passed in Congress that will put a price on carbon, and the money will come back to Americans all over the United States. That is a citizen-initiated effort at the national level. Then in California, the Romero Institute here in Santa Cruz, one of the leading political activists, some of the most daring of successful work for decades now, they are now leading an effort to create a California Green New Deal. They're writing the legislation, and they're working all over the state to get the support for it. We have just on the verge of passing public banking, which came out of Santa Cruz and other efforts as part of our climate action, because we get back half the money we spend on infrastructure right now ends up in banks as profits to the owners of the banks. With the public bank, we take all our tax money and we recycle it to actually spend $1 million or $1 billion rather than $2 billion to build a bridge. So as we go into having to totally overhaul how we get our energy and create a green economy, we've made sure that we have the mechanisms to do that with. Do I have time to go back locally and talk a little bit more about two things happening here? Part of the global effort, this global strike that we are starting on Friday, the 20th of September, originally started by Greta Thunberg, the now 16-year-old, who just said, stop. This is our lives, our futures. She has stood up before the World Economic Forum, the UN. She's in the U.S., and now we expect it will be the largest strike ever globally to cause the children basically saying to the adults, help us save the world so we have a world to live in. And here in Santa Cruz, the first day, it's a week-long process, will be...
Well, in the last few minutes, we do want to talk about our keep, stop, start. So you're talking about people, starting to get off the, stop being on the sidelines and start participating. Yes.
Let me just pick up for a second on that. Everything I say, people will... The discouragement is, what are our chances? Like, I can say, hey, we're not on the sidelines taking bets here. Get down in the field and play your heart out. I'm not interested in what our chances are. I'm interested in what direction our chances lie. Yes. And let's head like heck towards that. Yes. Make whatever they are, let's make the most of them.
Well, nothing will happen if you stay
gambling
on the sidelines.
Exactly. So the strike is a call to the world to come out and do something. And then some of the specifics that the among those in Santa Cruz that are helping to raise that are Extinction Rebellion, which you may or may not have heard of. It basically stopped London in its tracks and caused the Parliament in England to declare a climate crisis, a climate emergency. It's no longer just warming, it's overheating. And that triggered a similar effort, the Extinction Rebellion, throughout the U.S. And it's a major effort here in Santa Cruz. And they're among the leaders putting this whole strike together. Is this a time for me to talk about other events or what?
Yes, please do.
All right, so that kicks us off on Friday the 20th. Specifically, if you show up at Loudoun Nelson from 4 to 8, there will have been marches to get there, and then they're doing educational consortium for the day. There's a lot more information to be found at scruzclimate.org. Has the entire schedule.
S-Cruz.
I hope I've got that right. I wrote it down, and now I'm not finding what I was looking for, I'm sorry to say. But if you just Google
Santa Cruz. You know what I can do, Nancy, is I can take that document, because I have it electronically at home, and put it on my website, on the station's website.
The station's website will have it
as well. People can go, I can do that tonight or tomorrow, and people can go on the site and see that list.
Great. That's Friday, then. On Sunday, we have a Equinox climate meditation that will be in City Hall Plaza from 12:30 to 1:30. It's part of the effort of Nova Sutras to reconnect us to nature. On Monday at the Town Clock Tower, Extinction Rebellion will have a march down Pacific Avenue starting at 11:30 a.m. On Tuesday, our group is putting on Faith in Our Future that will occur at Peace United Church from 7 to 9, where we're looking both at the ability of organized, all of the different organized traditions. There's something called the Interfaith Power and Light is, again, a national effort with local roots to take the enormous political power that is often goes across party lines and put it behind the issues of ending climate change. And the other part of the evening will be dealing with these existential crises. When you understand not only the rapidity of what is happening, but how actually terrifying it is, the chance to go deep. And I'll just mention quickly, because we're now out of time, but our main event, the one that this program is related to, will occur Wednesday night. That's the Real Democracy Teach-In, and that is from 5 o'clock to 9 o'clock at Loudoun Nelson.
Thank you, Nancy. Stan, do you have any thoughts of Keep Stop Start for the listeners? And I know you had your two events that you wanted to mention again, remind people about.
My father was a scientist, and in the early 1980s, we had this discussion in which he said that he felt that we'd already soiled our bed past the point of no return. This was in the early 80s, and of course, he and my grandfather have been saying that all my whole life, right? From his indigenous perspective, my father was not indigenous. But my father said, he said, no matter what, however, we have to do our best every day, because you never know. Things can shift. You just don't know. We don't exactly have the whole picture. That's why we say Naponeha Ushan, great mystery. Okay? And that's, we are the mystery children. So we don't know. I lived in Guatemala for about 5 years in the 70s, and there was an older woman there that I talked to about this, and she, I said, you know, we were taught that you Maya disappeared. You know, coming up in school, we said, well, Mayan civilization disappeared. And she laughed, and she said, well, there's 7 million of us here. And I said, I know, you know, I'm living in the middle of you for years now. I said, what happened? She said, we just stopped. We walked out. Empire is not a good way to live. We just walked out, you know. And in a way, that's what Greta is saying, and I think that's what we need to really, really listen to. How do we feed that empire, and how do we shift it into something else without having to overturn entire systems? How do we shift our intentions, okay? And I think that's really crucial, and I want to come back to Juristak, because the land is sacred. And if we get caught up in political systems and all the rest of this, and we forget to protect indigenous land, we're forgetting to protect our own relationship to the land. We've, as Nancy said earlier, they've got us separated. You know, the systems have us all separated. So people don't realize what indigenous still realize is that when they go on, if they can get onto Juristak and pray, they're praying for everybody in the world. They're not just praying for themselves as Amamutsun. Here in Santa Cruz, we lost a 6,000-year-old village site in Brancy 40 Knoll because nobody in Santa Cruz backed us, and the city council just sold it to KB Homes, and they ground up mothers and children's bones and pulverized that place, okay, because we got no backing from this liberal community. So I want to bitch a little bit here, okay, and say that we need to go deeper with this idea of what is sacred and how what is sacred affects everyone. So I really want to urge people to get onto this Juristak website. Look to see how you can become involved and think about and feel how that is, it's not a symbol, but it's an action right now that will have so many repercussions in this community, spiritually, if you will, that it could be a very beautiful, empowering thing for everybody.
And the website is Protect Juristak, that's spelled JURISTAC.org.
That's correct.
ProtectJuristak.org.
Yes, it's about all of us.
Thank you. So I want to thank Emily Dunham, Be Bold America's program assistant, for her technical support. Another big thank you to our terrific guests today. I hope you come back. I think we just sort of got the surface of things here. So Stan Rustworth and Dr. Nancy Glock-Greenwich, thank you so much for being here. Next on Be Bold America, we'll be interviewing Ben Berwick, Counsel for Protect Democracy. Protect Democracy is a nonpartisan, nonprofit organization dedicated to fighting attacks from at home and abroad on our right to free, fair, and fully informed self-government. They believe together, armed with our Constitution and the rule of law, we can fight back, protect our democracy from those who would do it harm. You're listening to KSQD 90.7 FM, Santa Cruz, Many Voices, One Station, and listen worldwide online at ksqd.org. Stay tuned for New Dimensions with Justine Toms. My name is Jill Cody. Keep, stop, start.